Coming up on today's show,
I didn't think I would ever be able to smile again. I didn't think I would ever be able to laugh again. I didn't think I would ever find joy in anything ever again because I was so devastated. I was so beyond crushed.
Out of the ashes, she rose from the dust again. Shake it off, shake it off.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, proud member of the Recording Academy, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist who has won 2 Grammy Awards. Last year, she released 3 singles and a full-length album. She has written songs for, recorded with, and toured with a range of household names in country music. She is signed to Pump House Records, and she has had 7 singles on the Billboard Hot Country Songs charts. The videos on her official YouTube channel have gotten a combined total of over 7.2 million views, and she has approximately 22,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, where her top 5 songs alone have a combined total of over 4 million streams. You have been hearing a song of hers called Strong. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Rebecca Lynn Howard.
Hi there. Thanks for having me today.
You bet. You bet. Thanks ever so much for making time to speak with me. Let's get started by having you share first all about the song of yours that was just playing called Strong.
Strong is such a special song to me. I wrote this song about 12 or 13 years ago. Like, it's not a new song that, you know, is that we whipped up to record now. It's we wrote it about 13 years ago. And one of my favorite things about this song is that I had no idea when we were writing it and the message of the song, how relevant it would be to my life today. And I've seen it just really touch so many women and people who are going through some pretty hard stuff, you know, because life isn't, it's not always easy, you know. As a matter of fact, I find that the older I get and the more, like, life experience I get, I'm like, dang, this whole life thing is actually kind of hard, you know. And so that's what I love about the song so much, is that the message is, no matter how hard life seems to get, no matter how you feel like you're not going to get through it, that you just buckle down and you get that grit and you find the strength, because it's always in you. You know, I've noticed that when I feel like I need to give up or something's too big and I just can't endure it, like, that's not an option. Giving up is not an option.
Yeah.
So what else are you going to do? And there's just that strength that's in us that seems to magically appear every time we need it, you know? And that's what I love about the song so much, is that it really just speaks to people's lives.
And I get where you're coming from, where you say all of a sudden in 2025, when you release it, 2026, as we talk today, it means something entirely different. But when you did first write it 12, 13 years ago, who did you write it with? And what was kind of the spirit that you wrote it within back then when, you know, like you say, it means something entirely different to you present day?
Totally. I wrote it with my husband, Alicia Hoffman, and a duo group called Smithfield. Wonderful, wonderful duo. You can check them out too. But they were at the house writing for their project. So we were writing with them, and I just sat down with my guitar, and I don't know, just the first few lines of the verse started just pouring out of me, because we were talking about, you know, what if we wrote this song like called Strong, you know, and we were talking about sort of what that meant to us. And see, at the time I was like, oh, out of the ashes, she rose from the dust again. See, it was third person in my mind again. If I would have written it now, it would have 100% been first person. You know what I mean? But I feel like it's more impactful in a way being third person because every listener can see themselves in the song.
Right.
And, but yeah, that was the spirit behind it, was writing a song, championing, you know, women especially, but you know, anybody can go through a hard time. So yeah, that's how it all started.
I still have two follow-up questions because number one, at the time that y'all were writing it, were you writing it for yourself or for them? And then number two, since it didn't really go anywhere back then anyways, how does an artist record a project in 2025 and remember about a song that they wrote and never used 12 or 13 years ago? Or are you going to tell me, oh, Bruce, just because it never got recorded, like I've always continued to still play that song?
Well, we actually wrote the song for them. That
Wow.
was the whole purpose of Wow. the writing session that day. And they did a version of it. And, you know, when we demoed it that day upstairs in my studio. But I guess, you know, for whatever reason, artistically, they just felt like it didn't fit in with the rest of the songs that they had chosen for their album at that time. And it was one of those songs that ever so often I would kind of pull it out of the bag and play it just to see other people's reaction to the song.
Mm.
And it always got such a special response. And so when it came time for me to, you know, make this album, I was looking back on my catalog like 20 plus years, you know, because I've been writing songs for so, so long. And every once in a while, you'll just get this really special one and you just know it's special. And so that's kind of what Strong always was to me. I was like, man, why hasn't anyone cut this song yet? You know, because I just loved it so much. And so when it came time for me to put together my album, it just seemed like a no-brainer. That was one of the first ones I was like, I definitely am going to do that one. Because, you know, I was best known for my hit song, Forgive. And to me, this is almost like Forgive 2.0. It's a very singer's song. It, you know, really is vocally challenging, and it has a very, very deep message. So I feel like it's very true to my brand still. And, you know, just always has been a special song to me.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but something occurred to me as you mentioned going upstairs to your studio to demo it. And I do go to great lengths on this show to try to have a lot of teaching moments for people in the audience who are up-and-coming singers, songwriters, performers, etc. But I also very much recognize people who listen to the show that are just casual music listeners, and they just enjoy the conversations, and they don't know about the business, and they don't know, Rebecca, about the time and the expense that goes into demos. I mean, as you know, in Nashville, songs are getting pitched all the time, and there's pluggers and there's publishing companies and there's songs that get put on hold. And there's instances like you just described where, yes, even if it is your own home studio, here's all this time that goes into making a good demo and nothing ever comes with it. And in this case, until 12 or 13 years later. And I just think it's worth addressing so that the casual music listener knows how common this is. But I also wonder for you and the others, is it frustrating that this is such a regular occurrence that so much time and effort and expense goes into demos and a good percentage of them just never end up anywhere?
Yeah, it's incredibly common, like you said, because we have to get our songs down. You know, that's just part of the writing process and part of the process of trying to let this song see some kind of light, whether it be you recording it yourself or pitching it or maybe trying to get it placed in sync, like for, you know, a TV show or a movie or a commercial or whatever. I mean, there are a lot of different avenues that we can pitch a song for, but it is frustrating, you know, because you write so many songs and we always talk about how we feel like most of our songs fall in the big black hole of songs, you know, because there's Nashville every day, there's hundreds and hundreds of songs being written every single day. Well, there's no possible way that all of those could be cut and put out and for everyone to hear. You know, it does get frustrating, but I will say that that's just part of it. And anyone in the business just kind of knows that. And it just comes with it. And so you write it, you love it, you do the demo, and then you move on. And eventually there will be an opportunity, and it might be 12, 15 years down the road. And that's not uncommon either for a song to sit that long.
Wow.
Sometimes it takes years and sometimes even decades to get the song cut. But I always say the cream will rise to the top. Eventually there will be a moment for the really great songs to get recorded and to come out.
Amen.
For sure.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
So Strong, that song is off your I'm Not Who You Think I Am album that came out last year. Share with the audience all about that project, including who produced it, who executive produced it, how many tracks there are, where you recorded it, anyone you want to mention who performed on it. Give us all the details.
Oh, my. Okay, so we started recording this album in 2018.
Wow.
That's when the first guitar strums went down, and we were starting to build the tracks ourselves. And this is me and my husband, Alicia Hoffman. We had just gotten off of the road and decided that we were going to start this process. You know, it was something that we had talked about for 2 or 3 years at that point. And yeah, so we started kind of building out a few songs that we knew for sure we wanted to cut. And then it was just such a process and such a labor of love. It was executive produced by Lee Bryce, who also is, you know, one of the founders of Pump House Records, my record label. And Trent Harmon, who won American Idol years ago, amazing vocalist. He actually sang the harmonies on Strong. And he just has such a beautiful tenor voice, almost like a Vince Gill kind of quality to his voice. And Loving Mary Band, which is the band that I'm the bass player of. We, you know, toured with Steven Tyler and kind of went around the world with him for 10 plus years. There's a song that features the band, a song called How High, which opens the whole album, and one of my favorite songs. It's super fun and just a good toe tapper. I really love that one. And, you know, I have so many musician friends in Nashville. I've been there for almost 30 years now and just cultivated some amazing relationships with some of the greatest musicians in the world. So it's just been really fun putting all of this together. And like I said, the songs span all the way back to 20 plus years now. And it just shows you that, you know, you just got to hang on, and eventually they'll have their time to shine. But it took us a while, you know, to get this one finished. And I lost my dad in the middle of the process of making this record. And so it was just, it really threw a wrench into things, you know, as it should. And so that was really difficult for me to sort of like pick back up again and just move on as if nothing had happened. And at that point, then I became a completely different person, you know, because once you lose a parent, you're never the same after that.
Let me jump in for a second and let you collect yourself, because I just lost my dad in August. And then unexpectedly, I lost my sister on December 30th. You know, like you say, when you're in the middle of a project, to say, you know, that it kind of, I don't remember the words that you said, but, you know, it's putting it mildly of what it does to that. And the fact that, you know, the world does just expect you to just pick things back up, you know, and resume like, oh, that was too bad. Where were we with this? It's like, no, my whole life has changed. My whole life has changed. You know, I'm going to get back to the project eventually, but I learned the lesson, and it sounds like you did too, Rebecca. I learned the lesson when I lost my dad that you don't know what it's like to lose a parent until you lose a parent.
There's no way you can imagine the depth of pain and hurt and loss and so many things. And I mean, that was, you know, at this point, it's been over 4 years ago, and it hasn't gotten any easier. It's just that I've gotten more used to it, you know, because you just do. That's what happens with time. You just, you get used to, like, losing a parent is just the most devastating thing that I could ever go through. You know, I've never had any children of my own, you know, so I would never compare it to, like, losing a child or whatever. But I can't imagine what I could personally go through that would hurt any worse than that. And I told my husband, I said, I'm forever and completely changed, forever. Like, I'll never be the same person. And then, like, trying to slip back into that role and sing, you know, how high do you want to get? Like, I didn't want to sing. I didn't want to listen to any of it. You know, I was just hurting so bad. And it was really a time that I had to go within myself and just go, okay, you either believe what you say or you don't. Ooh. So this is the time to prove to yourself that all these songs you're writing, that, yeah, you can pick yourself up out of the ashes and you can do this, right? Strong. It's what happens when you're out of everything else. So do you believe what you say or don't you believe it? And I really had to just gird myself up and go, you know what? My dad would want nothing more than me to finish this. Like, I've got to do this. If for no other reason, for him. And that gave me the strength to move on and get it done.
Yeah, I feel you, because, you know, my dad would always listen to this show, and my mom would tell me that he did, and he would tell me himself. And so, you know, you do have those moments where you go, well, this stuff can all wait. I mean, I'm there's the Italian half of me, despite my long Polish last name, there's the Italian half of me that's too stubborn and says, but I've never missed a week since I launched the show in February 2014. So, you know, we got creative with what we were releasing. But, you know, I'm now up to 4 deaths in my family in less than 7 months. And, you know, when you try to answer the question that you just said, you know, which version of me is going to move forward at this point, you do default to, well, look, you know, Dad was so proud of you, and Dad enjoyed listening to the podcast. You got to keep doing it. And you, with the talent that you've been blessed with, you know, your dad would say, well, honey, I want to hear those songs. I want you to keep flourishing. And so, you know, we need our time, our grieving and healing period. And eventually we come back around when we're ready, you know, not when other people say, I think you're ready. I think you're ready. You know, only we know. And like you said, you're 4 years removed and you're still not quote unquote ready. But, you know, we both have to accept that our dads aren't coming back, you know, so we don't like it, but you know, our lives have been changed, and God bless you that, you know, that you took the time and that you responded the way you did and went into those songs saying, okay, now I know how and why I'm meant to perform these songs.
Yeah. Yeah. So many things took on a whole new meaning. There's a song called 17 on the record. And before I sing that song live, I always tell the story about how when I was a younger teenager in high school, you know, my dad would always say and encourage me to live up these years because these are going to be the best years of your life, you know, like in high school. And I was having such a hard time in high school. I was like, oh my God, if that's true, just kill me now. You know, these are going to be the... And then, you know, it kind of makes everyone chuckle. And then I say, but you know what? He was right. Mm. Oh my God, what I would give to be able to go back to that time in my life. I would have everybody I loved would still be alive.
Right.
And life would be simple. And I would still be singing. I would literally have everything I loved still in my life. Like, I would give everything and start over again to be able to do that and go back to that time.
Yeah, you and me both. My mom tells a funny story about, I can't remember which number it is, if I was 12 years old or if I was 14 years old, and she said that I came to her and was just so down and so desolate and said, "Mom, why does life have to be so tough?" And it's like, I was 12 or 14 at the time.
Wow.
You know, if she would have told me back then, you know, "Oh gosh, honey, wait until you're, you know, 30 years older than you are now," you know, then I would have realized. But, you know, there's so many things where perspective is everything. And you've learned that lesson, you know, through the loss of your father. So you kind of hearkened back to your earlier days. At the beginning of April, on episode 633, my guest was Nashville-based Alex Miller, who was on season 19 of American Idol and is originally from Kentucky. And now here we are on episode 644 with another Nashville-based guest who is also from Kentucky. Rebecca, go ahead. You started to say about when your high school years, but do some background setting for us. Where in Kentucky did you grow up, and how and when did you get started into music?
I grew up in the Appalachian Mountains in a little town called Salyersville, Kentucky, and that's on the far east side of Kentucky. There's a highway that runs up through the mountains there, and it's called U.S. 23. And off of U.S. 23 came Patti Loveless, Dwight Yoakam, Loretta Lynn, Crystal Gayle, Chris Stapleton, Keith Whitley, Billy Ray Cyrus, The Judds, Ricky Skaggs, Tom T. Hall.
Boy, oh boy.
Myself, like, there, it's so rich with country music and bluegrass music heritage up there that you don't have a choice but to be musical. You either have to be born completely tone deaf. That's probably your only escape from it. Because everybody's family sings or plays or does something musical, and we all grow up singing in church. Those are my earliest memories of singing, for sure. And there was a little group called the Kentucky Opry, and it was a group of kids there locally in all the surrounding counties in eastern Kentucky. And we formed this group called the Kentucky Opry. It was spearheaded by a music teacher, and I believe she taught at Betsy Lane High School in Pike County. And this was her love baby. You know, she formed this group of all of these kids, and she would take us around, and we would sing at political events and at the Capitol, and we would try to raise money because we were trying to build a Mountain Arts Center in Prestonsburg, Kentucky, which is now standing. We did it.
Awesome.
We kind of toured around for several years, and the state gave us grants and people donated, and we were able to raise, I believe it was $12 million.
Oh, gosh.
To build that facility, and it's a state-of-the-art facility. I've actually played there. Later on in my career, when I started having hits, I went back home and I've played on that stage. There are classrooms where kids can get free music lessons, and there's a studio inside. And it's really just like such an honor to be part of that group, you know, we just worked so hard to make that available for everyone there. So those are my earliest memories, and it gave me such stage experience, and I'll never take for granted, you know, those years when I was learning how to do this. So I'm very, very thankful for all of that.
Folks, we are so, so fortunate to get a front row seat to all these music business pros like Rebecca week after week, month after month, year after year, dishing out tremendous insights into the industry. Let me know what you are learning. Write to podcast@nhte.net. And on an upcoming episode of the show, I will read your email and at least your first name and where you are from as part of a mailbag segment. Or if you want to just have your note be what you like about the show, why you listen, or instead of a lesson learned, perhaps just an episode you particularly enjoyed and tell me why. It is part of my ongoing efforts to be more interactive with the audience, just like wanting to meet listeners of this show when I am out on the road. Rebecca, let's continue that story that you were telling insofar as I turned up that you play guitar, piano, and bass, plus obviously you sing and you write songs. So as you pursued all those different lanes in music, were you getting formal training in one or more of those areas, or self-taught, or some combination thereof? Just walk us through immersing yourself into singing, writing, and playing three different instruments.
Well, I was self-taught. When I was 6 years old, like I said, I grew up singing in church, and my cousin Lisa was the pianist in our church. I would sit on the piano bench with her, and I would just watch her play. And she showed me three chords, and I just took it from there. I started just being very observant, and I have a good ear, you know, for pitch and things, and I definitely would hear when I was making a mistake, and I would learn how to correct it. And so I became a decent piano player on my own, but I really wanted to play guitar, because it's hard to wag around a keyboard to go, you know, perform and support yourself. So I wanted to be a guitar player, because I wanted to be like Winona Judd, and I thought that was so cool for a girl to be playing guitar. And my parents, when I was 10 years old, they bought me a little guitar, and they bought me a book that had all of the chord progressions, like, and with the finger positions numbered. And I would just sit for hours and hours and hours and hours. When all my friends were playing Barbie, I was learning how to play guitar. And after a few months, I developed enough calluses and enough chords in my repertoire that I was able to start, you know, playing a few songs and entering talent contests and things like that, and became quite proficient at guitar over the years, because that became predominantly my main instrument.
Okay.
And then when I was in my 30s, funny story, like I had no aspirations of becoming a bass player. But it just happened that our little chapel church, the bass player, he quit. It started going somewhere else or quit. I don't really know, but all I know is he wasn't showing up and the music wasn't sounding as full. And so my brother, who went to church with me, he was like, well, you know, Rebecca plays bass. And I was like, I don't play bass. And he goes, well, you play guitar, and this one's only got four strings instead of six. Like, how hard could it be? I'm like, it's a completely different instrument, totally different. And so they were like, well, would you be interested? And I said, well, I mean, I guess I could help out. You know, can you give me maybe a list of songs and a couple of weeks to try to practice and see if I can even do this? So 2 weeks later, I became the bass player at the church.
Wow.
And then a few months later, I was sitting around writing songs with some friends of mine, my husband. It was just a big group of us that would get together, you know, once a week and write songs that we love to sing and a bunch of harmonies. And we were like, we should be a band. I mean, like among all of us, we can all play every single instrument. So I became the bass player in the band only by default, because I had been singing some harmonies in church while I was playing, and I didn't realize that playing bass and singing at the same time was considered like difficult to do. So I'm glad no one told me. And I became the bass player in the band. And then the story goes, we get the gig with Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, and I really had to learn how to become a bass player. And I taught myself on YouTube. Because I will not let anything hold me back. I'm just a very determined personality. And so
it.
I was like, okay, well, you've gotten yourself into this position.
I love
and
it.
I'm not going to say I can't do it. So I'm going to do it.
But backing up to everything that you described about young Rebecca back in Kentucky, I'm confused about, you know, when did you make the move to Nashville and what prompted it? But I'm also curious if it coincided with the fact that my math calculated that you were only 23 years old. You mentioned earlier about your highest charting single called Forgive. So you were only 23 at that point. So just put all those pieces together for us. Like I said, when you moved to Nashville and what prompted it, and where does that achievement fit into the timeline?
So my mom started taking me to Nashville when I was 10 years old.
Whoa.
Because I would, I would not leave her alone about
Whoa.
It. I was just determined. I know. And so, like I said, I had just learned how to play guitar. So I was like, okay, I got this. Let's go to Nashville. And so she took me to Nashville, and we started asking around town, like, where a 10-year-old could possibly sing. And back then, Nashville was different than it is now. Now it's, you know, completely metropolitan city, mini version of, you know, like a big metropolitan city. Back then, it was more of a just a big town. And everybody kind of knew everybody. And once you were linked to one person in the business, then it was like a little spider web. It wasn't very hard to find places to sing. So I started playing at this little restaurant called the Stockyard. And it was actually kind of a fine dining restaurant where people would eat steak and lobster. And, you know, a guitar player would sit over in the corner and just kind of play and sing as background entertainment. And that was the first place I started singing. He would play for me and I would sing. And one thing led to another, and years went by, and multiple trips to Nashville. And I started singing demos for people in studios. And then this guy comes in who's like, "You're amazing. I want to be your manager." And so we started working together and did a demo that we could pitch around to record labels. Started doing that.
Okay.
Finally, landed on, you know, some people that said, "Yeah, we want to sign you." So I basically had a record deal sealed before I even graduated high school.
Whoa.
And once I graduated, I moved full time to Nashville.
Wow.
And
wow.
Signed a record deal, signed a publishing deal, and I was on MCA Records and started putting songs out, and then had some hits. And
wow.
I mean, it's really like, it sounds like a fairy tale kind of scenario, but I'm leaving out like all of the mundane parts and the parts
where
I wasn't sure if I was really going to be able to do it. And, you know, because that's what the music business is. It's up and down and up and down and up and down. And you have to have the thickest skin in the world to survive this business. It's not easy, but the love of music is what keeps us all here and keeps us all going.
Yep.
Otherwise, you just have to be an idiot to say it.
Well, yeah, the whole Nashville is a 10-year town thing, you know, and like you just said, you know, the roller coaster that you do ride.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it was kind of a 10-year town for me. If you look at it that way, I started when I was 10, started having hits in my 20s. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of the rule of thumb. Everyone says that. So,
but you know, there's something else on your career resume that's also really interesting as it relates to timing. Like I was saying, that I had figured out she was only 23 when Forgive peaked at number 12 on the country music chart. In 2020, April 2020, is when you got signed to Pump House Records. In April 2020, the whole world was shutting down, and here's Rebecca Lynn Howard getting signed to Pump House Records.
Yeah, worst timing ever, huh? I mean, just the worst. The whole world was falling apart. So at that point, I mean, I couldn't feel sorry for myself because we were all going through it. So it was one of those things where I was like, well, you know, I just have to be cool with the cards that are being dealt right now. I don't understand this. I don't get it at all, but we're going to roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, 2020 comes and goes and we're stuck at home, but I was writing songs on Zoom and still working, you know, on the record at my house, 'cause it was me and my husband working on it anyway. And so we kept things going, you know, and we got through all of it and wrote some, you know, cool songs. Like Flower Bed was written during that time. And I and my mother, we wrote that right before the shutdown happened. And so there was like a lot of activity that was going on, you know, during, I don't know. COVID was just such a bizarre time warp. I look back on it and I'm like, you can't even count those years.
No, but I like that you decided to go to gratitude, you know, that you're like, oh, the world is shutting down. Like, what the heck? This is so anticlimactic. And it sounds to me like you decided, I'm just going to go to gratitude. Like, this does look weird, but I'm just going to be thankful for it and let it play out. And, you know, the world will open back up at some point, and this whole relationship with Pump House Records will be a lot more meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at that point, I'd been through so many ups and downs in the music business. It was almost laughable, you know, for one more obstacle. It's like, okay, this is nothing. I would even joke and say, what, I'm forcing me to stay home with my dogs? Like, this is amazing, you know, like just trying to find the good in it. And I did a lot of like Facebook Lives and things like that where sure. I could still connect with my fans.
Sure.
And do that because I didn't want to be just completely isolated and separated from everything. And I've had so many people reach out to me and tell me, thank you for that, because we were all like sitting on our couch and in an apartment. We couldn't go outside. And like you gave us, you know, a fun thing to do and look forward to evening, you know.
Love it.
And so, yeah, you just got to make the best of what you got.
I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville by singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Rebecca Lynn Howard. Visit her official website at RebeccaLynnHowardOfficial.com. I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, NHTE.net. You heard her talking earlier about I'm Not Who You Think I Am, the 11-song album she put out last year. On her website, you will see a link that says CDs and vinyl. Use that to go to her Bandcamp, where you can order it in those physical formats or digital, or look for it on iTunes and other online digital music retailers. As evidenced by the big numbers I cited back in the intro, yes, you can also follow Rebecca and stream her music on Spotify. Speaking of following, look for logos, links on Rebecca's website to follow her on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, and to go subscribe to her YouTube channel that you heard me mention in the intro. Stay with us because I am going to be asking Rebecca about an event you can go see her perform at in August out west. This morning, I was thinking about tea drinkers versus coffee drinkers. You hear me mentioning buymeacoffee.com on this show each week, which, by the way, as a quick aside, they're not a sponsor of the show. They don't pay me to talk about them, and in all likelihood, don't even know that I am talking about them on Now Hear This Entertainment each week. Anyhow, it occurred to me, couldn't they also have a buymeatea.com? And then I realized, no, because some people might think it's a tea, as in a t-shirt, and they might spell the website address wrong, T-E-E instead of T-E-A, or maybe just the letter T. In any case, if you like what I'm doing on this podcast each week, go to my show website, nhte.net, and look for the bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button, which will take you to a landing page where you will see others before you, guests and listeners, and how many coffees they bought me, the message that they wrote to me, and the reply that I posted back to them. I very much appreciate your support of this show. Rebecca, as busy as you have been for many years now in music, one constant for you has been your faith. Can you share with the audience about the importance of that in your life?
Well, I told you earlier I grew up singing in church, and I always joke and tell people, look, I was in church 9 months before I was even born. So church and my faith in the Lord has always been such a big part of my life, and honestly, something that if I did not have it, I don't know if I would be here right now. Because like we were talking about earlier, life gets very dark and it gets very, very difficult to navigate. And there have been a lot of nights where I just would lay there and feel like I would just slip out of my body. I don't know even how to explain it. Like with losing my dad and, just going through that feeling of when his spirit left his body, I feel like part of mine left my body. It was just such a such a hard blow to my soul and to my heart. And to get over that, I didn't think I would ever be able to smile again. I didn't think I would ever be able to laugh again. I didn't think I would ever find joy in anything ever again, because I was so devastated. I was so beyond crushed. And leaning into my faith is what totally got me through it, 100%. And, you know, not that losing a record deal or, you know, those things that in comparison to losing your dad doesn't seem to be very big, but even those smaller things, I would lean into my faith and it would just help me have hope that tomorrow might be better. Tomorrow might be better. Tomorrow might be better. And when you have hope, you have everything. Mm. If you don't have hope, it's hard to get through. So my faith gives me hope, and hope keeps me hanging on. Mm.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Amen. Amen. I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, which is the Loving Mary Band, because I want you to clarify for the audience that that is still present tense. It's not something that you did in the past.
Yes. We are still a band. We still play out at mostly private events. There's not many public shows that we play anymore, but we haven't toured since 2019. It was really devastating to a lot of us because, just like putting a monkey wrench in the album process, it also really stifled Loving Mary shows. We were very hot at the time. We were the go-to band for corporate stuff in Vegas. And I mean, we were just playing all the time.
Wow.
Big, big crowds. And so, yeah, it was just such an amazing thing. So we tend to do more private things, but yeah, we're still a band. We still love each other all these years later. Must be setting some kind of record.
Last September, I interviewed Brett James, and then tragically, 1 week after I interviewed him, he was lost, sadly, to this world. He did tell a hilarious story on episode 606 about Steven Tyler. You've mentioned him a couple times now, so I would love it if you could tell us about your time on the road with Steven.
Steven is such a hoot. He's so full of life and just has so much love and joy and such a big personality, but he's just got so much to give, and he's a very generous person with all that he has to give. When he talks to you, he looks straight into your eyes and you feel like you're the only person that exists, the only person that's important to him at that moment. And and he's like that with everyone. It's not a put on, it's not for show. He's just genuinely like that. Mm. And that's very refreshing to see somebody of his stature, you know,
yeah,
who could totally be not nice and a total, you know, rock star, and it would be forgiven and excused because, like, oh, he's just a rock star. But he's so genuine and he's so sweet. My dad actually met Steven several times, and Steven's been over at my house for dinner, and just wonderful memories that we made on the road, and personal things too, like him coming over and hanging out with us for dinner, and we would sit around the living room and just sing oldies and gospel songs. And I mean, he's just full of life. He just loves people. He loves people.
And audience, my connection to Steven Tyler is my buddy Buck Johnson. Buck Johnson, keyboards and vocals for Aerosmith. He was a guest on this show way back, episode 169. And Buck actually told a really fascinating story about how he got the gig with Aerosmith. So go back and listen to that. I'll put a link to it on the show page for Rebecca's episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. I'll also put a link to the Brett James interview. I had set up that question, Rebecca, about your time on the road with Steven. So speaking of going out on the road, I teased this when I was giving out all your online destinations, but in August, you will be out west performing for the second year in a row as part of the Las Vegas Songwriters Festival. Tell us about last year's edition, as well as what you're looking forward to at this one coming up.
So the Las Vegas Songwriters Festival was really, really a huge success. And my hat's off to all of the people involved, because that's not easy to do on your first year. It's just not. And it was such a wonderful experience. They took such good care of us songwriters, and we had wonderful venues to play. The audiences were packed, for one, and super attentive. It was really a lot of fun. I'm looking so forward to this year and just seeing, like, if they've added anything, if anything's going to be different. But it wouldn't have to be, because last year was absolutely perfect. I had no qualms or complaints. And it's so much fun. I mean, it's Vegas. So if you like Vegas and that's your cup of tea and you love music, it's just such a perfect fit. You got to come out and see it. It's a wonderful, wonderful festival.
By the way, folks, that event is August 20th to the 22nd at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. Go to LasVegasSongwritersFestival.com for all the details. And since we have heard Rebecca talking about touring with Steven Tyler and the Loving Mary Band, I want to also mention Kenny Rogers, Alan Jackson, Blake Shelton, Gretchen Wilson she's toured with. I mentioned at the beginning of this show that she's written songs for and recorded with some really big names in music. Martina McBride, Trisha Yearwood, Runaway June, Point of Grace, Charles Esten. She's written songs for them. She's recorded with Dolly Parton, Vince Gill, Patti Loveless, Alan Jackson. Just amazing. Just amazing. And something that factors into all this stuff is not only faith, but health. And Rebecca, I'm interested to hear about what I'm told is your journey to better health through better food.
Yes. So about 3 years ago, which would have been about a year after my dad passed away. So about 3 years ago, I just started getting really sick, not feeling good at all. As a matter of fact, I was convinced I was like dying. For lack of a better way to describe it, I had no idea what was going on with me, and going to doctors and blood work and all the things, and the tests were coming back normal. And I'm like, I don't understand this. You know, there's no possible way that there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
And after about a year and a half of like struggling and suffering through such sickness, I finally got diagnosed with Lyme disease. And everything started at least to make sense. You know, all of my symptoms, which seemed to be all over the place, totally lined up with this diagnosis. And I found wonderful practitioners who helped me and treated me, and also turned me on to a better way of living. Now, mind you, I've always eaten pretty clean. I'm pretty health conscious. And so, but there were certain things and certain foods that they told me to stay away from, as far as foods that were very inflammatory, because Lyme disease attacks your nervous system, and so you feel just super inflamed in your brain and all over your body. It's like your joints hurt, your muscles hurt, you feel swimmy in your head. It's just the weirdest symptoms. And so once I started eating a certain way, I felt my symptoms start to ease up, and the inflammation started going down in my body. And I'm happy to say that after a year and a half of hardcore treatment, that the Lyme is no longer showing up. And so I'm technically, I don't want to say cured, because we can't say that. But can we say it's in remission? And I'm symptom free as far as Lyme disease. And, you know, it's done some, it does damage to the parts and the systems of the body that it attacks, but it's healable. Like, it's going to heal. That part just takes some time, and I'm so much better than I was. But my diet really contributed so much to my healing and just feeling better during the treatment and things like that. So food is medicine for sure.
Wow. Praise God. Praise God. Oh, yeah. Man.
Absolutely.
We are in the home stretch. So as we start to wind down, you've mentioned him a handful of times during our conversation, but tell us more about your favorite producer in all seriousness, being a musical couple, tell us what it's like to have a husband and wife who are both full-time in the music business.
It's wonderful and it's hard and it's easy and it's everything in between. And it's all the things that you could possibly imagine. It's fighting and it's making wonderful music and it's laughing and having a great time and being stressed out at each other. But there's nobody that I would want to go through this process other than my husband. He is my absolute rock. And, you know, we've been through so much. This life, like we talked about, like it just deals you all kinds of blows. And he's such a rock for me and has helped me so much. He never pushed me, you know, when I wasn't ready to get back into the studio. He was always just very supportive and like, you know, you've got to take care of yourself first. Like the music can wait. This is not as important as you and your heart and your health and just everything about this situation. Like we've got to heal. And he and my dad were close too. So, he was dealing with his own grief and his own way of coping. And so our relationship is great. We're really good friends and we were for about 2.5 years before we even started dating. We were really good friends. And I think that gave us a great foundation for our relationship moving forward, because even when we do get on each other's nerves and frustrated with each other or stressed out about something, we always have a really firm foundation to fall back on, you know, but it was rooted and grounded in like friendship love before romantic love. And I don't know. I just think that really worked out better for us because it was such a genuine, real, just I care about this person love. And so, yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And it's
very special. How long have the two of you been married?
Oh my goodness. We have been, I think we're coming up on our 13th wedding anniversary, but we've been together almost 20 years.
Wow. Wow. But you know, I'm picturing, as you were talking, I'm picturing the tense moments in the studio where you're looking at him and you're going, listen, I'm the artist. This is the way it should be. And he's going, listen, I'm the producer. This is the way it should be.
Yeah.
And you know, as much as we can laugh about it in those moments, it is very tense, but because you've gone through what you've gone through with your dad, it just puts a whole new perspective on things where later on that night you go, I didn't like that we were arguing in studio today, but give me a break. Like there's bigger problems in the world. You know, I don't have my dad here anymore. Like I'm sure we can sort out what we're going to do with that song that we couldn't come to an agreement on.
Yeah. All of the things that seem so important, they become so unimportant.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know what, in 5 days, if we're not going to remember what we were arguing about, probably doesn't matter.
So let's
just get on with it.
Wow. Never mind the music business, folks. There's some good relationship advice for you right there. But, you know, on the music business side, though, certainly, you know, you want to get it right. You want it to be the best. Your name is on it as the artist, you know, and his name is on it as the producer. So those can be some tense moments, but you know, the project also doesn't have to be solved. You know, it's not going to be recorded and released in a couple days time. So you walk away from it and you go, you know what, let's move on to a different song and let's just revisit that next week.
Yeah. And I think it works out really well between us because like I said, we were friends and we were songwriter partners, you know, before, and we respect each other and our talents and we have just such a trust. Like I trust him, even though I might not agree with something in the moment, I go, you know what, I'm having him produce this for a reason because I trust him musically. And I just have to know that he's hearing something in his head that isn't on tape right now. And when it's all finished, it's going to sound amazing because it always does. You know, I just have to have a little more faith in the process with him and go, you know what? You've never let me down before. I don't get what you're saying 100%, but I'm going to go with it because I trust you. And he'll do the same for me.
Plus, I love that point that you made about the history as songwriters together, because you know, ultimately, we are here to serve the song. And so I am going to defer to his expertise, because I know from that history, he too is coming at this from the approach of, we need to do what's best to serve the song.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone's only got the best intentions. So you just got to, like I said, you just got to trust each other.
Nice. Nice. We're going to close today with another one of Rebecca's original songs, the title track from the album she released last year, I'm Not Who You Think I Am. Before I let you go and we play that one, Rebecca, share with the audience all about this song first, if you would, please.
This is the oldest song on the record. This one's over 20 years old. I wrote this with James LeBlanc, and I can just see it in my head so clear.
Wow.
And it's so long ago, but
wow.
I was sitting in my living room. This was even before I met my current husband, like before all of that. And totally at a different musical place in my life too, and much younger. But I was thinking about my uncle who passed away when he was struck by a drunk driver.
Oh.
And the irony of all of this is that my uncle battled alcoholism himself. And the last 6 months of his life, he had sobered up. He was trying to change his life, and tragically, he was killed by a drunk driver. And
gosh.
So I was thinking about that and just the irony of it, but also just the web, the tangled web that it sort of weaved in his life. Like, as much as he was trying to escape that fate, it ended up getting him anyway. And I wanted to write a song about it, and just in memory of him and his struggle with alcoholism, and anyone else, you know, fighting their own battle. Like, it's not easy. There's no judgment at all coming from this song, but what's interesting about it is that it's from the perspective of the alcohol actually is singing the song.
Wow.
So it's the drink that's singing the song.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not who you think I am. So I'm not going to be the one to solve all your problems, even though you think I'm going to. So it's very haunting, and it's one of my absolute favorite songs, which is why I reached back over 20 years to pull it out of the archives and put it on this record.
That
it's
is so
amazing.
Clever.
I love it so much.
That is so
Thank
clever.
You.
Wow. Wow. Plot twist, right? Audience. So good. So good. Rebecca, this was amazing. So wonderful to speak with you. Thank you ever so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Rebecca Lynn Howard. Again, do visit her official website at RebeccaLynnHowardOfficial.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, NHTE.net. Today, you heard Rebecca talk about the album she released last year called I'm Not Who You Think I Am. On her website, use the CDs and vinyl menu option to get taken to her Bandcamp to order it in one of those physical formats or to get it digitally. In addition, the album, well, plus her back catalog for that matter, is available through iTunes or other online digital music retailers. Join the approximately 22,000 monthly listeners on Rebecca's Spotify and engage with her on social media. This morning, I started following Rebecca on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, and I'm sure she would appreciate you doing the same. For that matter, tell Rebecca you heard her and her music on Now Hear This Entertainment. We did not get a chance to talk about her official YouTube channel. Go check that out. Hit the subscribe button and then watch and like the videos on there. More than 7.2 million combined video views on that platform. Wow. And remember, August 20th to the 22nd, you can go see Rebecca perform at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino as part of the Las Vegas Songwriters Festival. That will do it for episode 644. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Rebecca Lynn Howard. This is the one she just talked about. It's called I'm Not Who You Think I Am.
I'm not who you I'll calm your shaking hand, but I'm not who you think I am. Your friend, I'm not who.